During the bound clerk, there are several times when we get together and we have we do a reading and then a moment of silence. And the first one that I want to read to you is by Walt Whitman, and it goes like this. Now I know the secret of making the best person. It is to grow in the open air and to eat and sleep with the earth. Atwabang is the largest and oldest adventure-based education institution in the world. It's non-profit and it's tax-exempt organization. If some of you have problems understanding me, please don't hesitate to stop me, because I do want you to be able to catch every word. And I think because I have a concern that I may be just doing all the talking and not really allowing you to participate, I'm just wondering, does anybody here know when Atwood Bound was first found? Anybody have any ideas?
I think it was during the Second World War.
Okay, that's good.
I think I remember that the British were concerned about the young men didn't survive and the older middlemen, and the younger men hadn't had any real test of life.
Do you happen to know the name of a man who's found that rebound?
No.
Okay. You're exactly right. That's what's interesting, the man who found that rebound, his name is Kurt Heim. And he was a German Jew, and he was headmaster of the Salem School in Germany. And he had some ideas about, he really thought that he was a headmaster of a private school, and he thought that the classical private school education did not really provide the whole, for the whole person. And so he was kind of experimenting with that, trying to do that in the school. However, we're approaching World War II, and he being a German Jew, he thought, not a good place for him to be, so he went to England. And Atwood Bound was established in 1941. And at that time, like you were saying about the sailors, right, to build some kind of confidence and will to survive. But one thing I do want to make sure, when you leave here, please do not think that Atwood Bound is about survival, because it's not. And a lot of times, I'm going to be talking about how the course go, and you'd be thinking, wow, you must be a survivor. It's not, It's really, Atwood Bound is really taking people age 14 up to 56 years old, taking them out of their normal everyday life, put them in extreme situation from they get up 5 o'clock in the morning, and depending on the group, sometimes they go running maybe 1 or 2, 3 miles, and then they jump in the ocean or they jump in the pond. And if any of you've been to Maine, jumping in the ocean, it's not a pleasant experience. I can tell you that for sure. And then after that, well, I have to wait. No problem. Since we had a very, very mild interruption, I think it's time for another reading. Don't you agree? I agree. This one, I'm going to make two reasons, but the first one is a favorite of mine. Yeah, for some of you who have the opportunity of seeing me in other sessions, you get a pretty good idea that I described this. And the passage is by Henry David
Thoreau.
Okay. And it says, if a man does not keep pace with his companion, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music he hears, however measured or far away. Another one by Eleanor Roosevelt says, and this is very, it's very true in Outer Bound, because you're being asked to do things that you've never really done before. And I give you a good example. She hears a lady climbing up a tree. If you can see this, it's climbing up to the tree. Okay? Climbing up to the tree here. And there's a little boy right there, and what she's gonna do is that she's gonna climb up to that boy and it's really tough, and it's real small, and she has to get up on top of that. I guess, yeah, I mean, I don't, maybe 70 feet from the ground, you know. But if you look at this, see the, look, there's a rope, there's a line there. So she thought I should be okay. So should have been here now. Because we're really big on safety, you know. I mean, that is a stream. Yeah, this is not something that this particular person does in everyday life. Eleanor Roosevelt. Remember, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. There are five United States Outward Bound schools. Anybody knows when the first one was established? No? Okay. The first Outward Bound school was established in 1962 in Colorado. Yeah. And since that time, we have five United States Outward Bound schools. One is in Colorado, one is in Hurricane Island, Maine, of which I am a staff member there. And North Carolina, and for some of you people who, after the session, say, hey, I just saw that, you know. There's the one called Pacific Crest in Oregon, which is an Outward Bound school up there. And there's one in Minnesota, and I can't pronounce the word, so forgive me. Right here?
Voyager?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Outward Bound group. You know, getting back to Outward Bound was established in 1941 and it started the United Kingdom. And from there it spread to Europe, Africa, Asia, Australia, and North America. And I really didn't know that. I thought, well, of course there's a couple of schools in England, but I was looking at a bulletin board at Hurricane Island and I'm not advertising there. Maybe I should go down to South Africa. I mean, they have Outward Bound schools in South Africa. Yeah, and it's just amazing. Australia, anybody here from Australia? Nope, okay. It was all over the place. And how many people here are Irish? Irish? You're Irish right there?
Not as much.
Just about as much, that's okay. You're Irish?
Got this much.
Okay, anyway, I have this guy named Chris Carrington who was my boss in Hurricane Island, and he's Irish too, and we were talking, and he was telling me about building an Outward Bound school in Ireland, and I'm going, doesn't make sense. There's Great Britain, and there's no Outward Bound school in Ireland. It kind of struck me, but it kind of reflects, you know, the high feeling between Britain and Ireland. Okay. All right. And also, we also have all kinds of urban programs. We have one in Boston, U.S. City, Baltimore, Chicago, Minneapolis, and Los Angeles, which is designed to address the needs of inner-city youth and try to help them somehow be able to address the social, cultural, educational plan within another group. Okay. Yes, Gabriel.
How large are those Outward Bound schools? So how many people are involved in the schools?
I really don't know, except that If you ever go to the Out of Bounds school, especially in the summertime, it's busy, busy, busy. People come, students come, and they go. I really can't.
So it's kind of like Holden Village, maybe?
Yeah. There are many adventure-based educational schools. Run a project adventure. And what that, were you the guy yesterday, the challenge? No, I wasn't you, huh? Let me hear that. Okay. Well, anyway, there's all kinds of programs, but Outward Bound is the largest in the world and it's the oldest in the world. Anybody like to take a guess on what is Outward Bound mean? Anybody here is a sailor? Nobody here is a sailor? No? Anybody here know how to sail a boat? You do? And you don't know what Outward Bound means?
Little boat.
It's a little boat? Okay. Well, I'm going to help you out, so when you go back home, that'll be a new term that you can use. And to be quite honest with you, I did not know that either until tonight, today. So you shouldn't feel too bad. Out of Bounds is a
nautical
term, and it describes a ship leaving port. Okay. One thing that Kahan really believed, if I can find my notes, he really believed in using the mountain. He really believed in using the sea for his program. And of course, this is why I talk about Hurricane Island in Maine. It was beautiful. You got the sea and you got the beautiful Maine wilderness. You go up to Minnesota, to North Woods, and you got the Boundary Woods, which is gorgeous. You know? Of course, we don't have to say a beautiful country up here. Kahan, when he was looking at the classical private school education, it just wasn't enough for the whole person. He really believed that education should develop a passion for life. And he really believed that it can only be accomplished only through experience. And a shared sense of moment in the trip towards their study goal. This is why, and I'm thinking, he really, let me see if I can move on before I come back to that. And he really believed that this experience should be accessible to any human being at any level of ability, should have this opportunity to be involved in the process. He also saw educational value in small groups. He thought it was a way to develop natural leadership abilities he thought were present in most people, but were depressed by dependency and passivity of modern life. You know what I mean? You know how, like, we're sitting in Houghton Village Center, and what we do, we sit at a table, and we kind of wait, and we don't know who's going to show up at that microphone. I don't. But somebody usually popped up there, so we're like, I think what he was really talking about is that we all have the ability to do something with our lives. Now, whatever it means that we decide to just go out and take a hike, or it means that we try to take our kids to a baseball game, or take a chance to learn how to play a guitar. And that kind of leadership, in a way, because you're showing others that you're striving to be the best. I mean, you're just showing others nothing. That's a sign of a very good leader, is someone to see you doing things. One more thing, too, he's really gung-ho about it, is community service. And we really believe that, you know, that within an Atlas Bankers, it should do something for the community. So what I'm going to do is to take you on a trip. And I want you to tell you what happened from day one to day five. Actually, maybe I should take you from day one to day 22, which is what I did about 2-3 weeks ago. Working with teenagers, 15, 17-year-olds, they come to Hurricane Island. Actually, they come to Rockland, Maine. Yeah. And you can kind of see them, you know, they're kind of staying apart, you know, they're not really looking at each other, you know. You check their bags, and my God, they must have 15 Hershey bars there, you know. You look at somebody else's bag. He had a really big cassette box, which I thought was, you know, okay, you know. And I opened it. And they're all about this group called Snarter. S-L-A-U-G-A-T-E-R. Snarter, you know. And then, of course, what we do is we tell the kids to empty the bags because we really don't want them to take anything that they really don't need. And so I'm looking at the kid's t-shirt. And I don't want to repeat what I read in the t-shirt. You know, just... And then I go in another bag. A pretty girl, 15 years old, really gorgeous, lovely hair, a little bit blonde, a little bit red. She opened her bag. God, I must have had like 2-3 little big canisters of hairspray. And of course, she's telling him, I don't think he'd be using this on out of bounds. What is the purpose of why we're going to those bags? Because, first of all, when you're out in the wilderness, you do not need hairspray. You agree? You do not need to go out there with candy bars. And even worse, you know, some kids, you know, with that we call that, do you know what it's called? You know, don't bring that, you know.
Oh, I don't know. You need children.
I tell you something. If you ever went on an Outward Bound course and you were a group of people for 6 days, yeah. I can guarantee you all of you are going to smell. And you know what happens when all of you smell? You don't smell anything. I'm only deviate a little bit. We were getting ready to do a solo, okay? And every Outward Bound course, it depends, you know, if it's an 18-day course or longer, we have a student do a 3-day solo, which means we put them out on an island. Maybe there may be like 2-3 students on an island, okay? Now, remember I told you about survival, this is not survival. What we do, we give them a little bag, maybe 2 crackers with peanut butter in that, maybe some grub and an apple. We give them a gallon jug. Okay. So for 3 days we will come by, we check them, and we will give them the bag. Now, we tell students that if they want to fast, that'd be fine too. Because, you know, you're talking about what we did today, from Billy Green, you know. People fast all over the world. They do that to kind of clean the body of toxins and stone. So. So anyway, we also tell them about homeless people because, you know, we are actually giving them this every morning, okay? We check them twice a day, but you understand that you know we're going to come check them in the morning, we're going to check them in the afternoon. Homeless people, they don't know we're going to be checking up on them. They don't. They don't know if they're going to get food. They just don't know. And so we tell the kids that so they can have a little sense of putting a perspective on where they are. So anyway, so we're dealing with all this stuff, right? And we believe in self-denial because you just don't need help for stuff. We had one kid with I think Tang or some kind of drink now. You don't need that, you know. I forgot, you'd be drinking plenty of water, you know. So then we get them lined up, and what we do, we bring them together, and in this case, we have 46 kids. Okay, we have four rosters, which is, when you break it down, average to about 11 or 12 per roster. Now, rock is a Navy term, and the top boss is called a course director. He or she's the one that opens up the whole course, making sure everything goes the way it's supposed to go. And then the assistant course director who goes around telling me what to do, you know. You were supposed to laugh at that, but that's okay, you know. Anyway, no, I don't think that was funny, no. Sometimes I think it's funny, but it's not funny. So. Yeah. Kind of scary if it's funny, you all know that, but no. That's okay. Anyway, and then below that are called watch officers. So four watchers have four watch officers. And let me tell you what their credentials are. Good. Because when you go out on that sea with 10, 12 students, you really don't know about staying on the boat. You gotta have a roster officer. That roster officer has a captain's license. Okay. That roster officer went through what is called a wilderness first responder. You ever hear of it? It's called emergency medical training out in the wilderness. It goes for 10 days. And basically what happens, you go into training, you don't know what's going to happen. Something's going to happen. It's all stimulated, and then you go and try to figure out what's going to happen. And they get probably more training on how to deal with medical problems out of the wilderness than some EMTs. You know. Anybody here EMT? Nobody here EMT? I think I better start asking questions because I keep getting no answers. You know. Anybody here teachers? Nobody's a teacher here? Oh, you're a teacher, good. Anybody here own a house? Okay, I feel better. Okay. And then below the roster officer, we have an assistant roster officer. And what they do is, yeah. I didn't.
What is EMT?
It's an emergency medical technician.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, since we're on that topic, I mean, we had a situation on this course where there was one boat 15 miles from our base, and the girl was getting really kind of sick, you know. You know, so what the officer would do was take the blood pulse, you know, checking it, you know, and monitoring her pulse, monitoring her blood pressure and temperature and so on. And then the days were on, she began to throw up and so on. And so the officer tried to contact us. But you know how it is when you're out on the radio, you just don't get through sometimes. But, and it just so happened that the course director and me and the assistant course director, we went to Burns Island, which is where our base was for this particular course. He just turned around and went the other way. And so he was just getting ready to leave the dock at Port Klang, Maine, to go to another boat to give him wood, and that's when we finally got contacted. You know. They think the girl may have hepatitis. And you think about that hepatitis. Hey, you better make sure we weren't sure, but the way she was moving, you know, and the pain, you know, so anyway, so she's okay, she did not have hepatitis, but the responsibility on the roster officer in that situation was very, very stressful. Okay. So what we do then we play the name game. Yeah. I hate name games. You like name games? Oh, I hate them. Yeah. I always try to be the best one, but it doesn't always work when the name game happens, you know. So anyway, so we lined up and I would say my name. And I would say what I like. So we would say, what's your favorite food? So you say, my name, I like pizza. And that's the way the kid responds, you know. The other kid would go, my name is Joe. And, Gina. You know, teenagers, they can decide on things, you know. They go, Eminem. And so it goes through the whole line, and that's the way it goes, you know. And then what we do real quickly, we tell them what they gotta do. Yes.
How do you understand those people if you can't really hear them?
I don't. Now, actually, in this particular case, it's one to one, you know. And what I would do is I ask them to start out speaking. Yeah. And a couple of times I go, you know, like we have this, me and you, Beth, we know about this routine that people do, that we would, somebody asks you a question, you don't know what they're talking about, we shake our head, hoping they would go away. You know that?
Yeah.
It's very effective. So if you have people that ask you a question, you don't want to answer, nod your head, you know? And walk away, and maybe, you know, so anyway. So we quickly go into the building, we give them foul weather gear, foul weather pants, light jacket, boot, whistle. Okay. And then we put them right in the book. I mean, we're moving now, you know what I mean? It's not like, hey man, can we take a break? I'm getting tired, you know? No, just keep moving. We get them on the boat, and what we do, we call rap section. I know it seems like an old hippie term, rap, but that's enough. But we use the word rap, and we're rapping all the time throughout the course, getting together, talking about the boat, talking about responsibility, the captain, first mate, bosun mate, and shrubbies, and cooler master, and so on. We push them out. We just, and they just go out, and they sleep. Offshore. I mean, we don't leave them on land. We just take them offshore. And what happens is they sleep on the boat. Let me show you the picture of what the boat looks like. This. That's what the boat looks like. It's a 30-foot column boat. See? Can you see that? They both got to see the spot. Whoa. Okay. Now, do you know what this means? It means there's no guy, there's no below. You know what I mean? This means that you have oars, because if there's no wind, you got to row.
Oh, wow.
You know, and students don't really particularly like rowing. So, we tell them, we gotta go someplace. Yeah,
is this
right.
Like a Viking? Like a Viking ship, sir?
Yeah, it's great. You know, I think a year ago I was on staff training, and we were coming around the point. It's raining. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. We come around. Uh-oh, the wind starts to blow. And it was like, I think maybe, let me see, I'm trying to figure out how high the 12 was. It's about this high, you know? And I'm on the tiller, you know? I don't know why they asked me on the tiller. I was on the tiller, you know? And there's a camper down here. Yeah, I gotta look at that camper, hold the tiller, and make sure I don't fly the boat. And then the boat is going up in the air. Boom. Up in the air. And of course, one of the things about out of bounds, of course, is that you begin to ask yourself, why am I here? But teenagers say, why did my parents put me here? Did I do something wrong? So, on this boat, what happened is we put a sail down, we put up a couple it's split, which is like, it's a split, it's the one that holds the stair up. If you can see it, it's a little wooden thing that's sticking up. What we do is spread the order, I guess. We ask students to sleep on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're talking about clothes. So if you're a teenager and you sleep in your own bed, and you end up having to sleep with all these people. On that particular boat, you're like this. You can't move. They're all trying to go like sardines. No, you can't. And one course that happened, I'm sleeping, and then they have the responsibility. I very well. They have to get up. Everybody takes turns to get on the stone, right? The stone, and just to make sure the anchor, if the wind changes, you gotta make sure. Now, because if you don't keep watching, you never know. The wind changes direction, the tide, maybe misestimates the tide and the depth of the anchor. So, yeah. So one time, I get up, they woke me up, I get up, and I realized I couldn't find my flashlight. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, I couldn't find my flashlight. And I couldn't see. And so I didn't know how long I should be on watch. So it was a terrible experience for me, because I kept going to get, hoping that I could at least see, and I couldn't see. But anyway, what happened, the girl came and took my place. You know. She had a flashlight, that really helped. So I go and I go to sleep. I'm smuggling in the standing position. Let's tell her now, 45 minutes later, she's waking me up. I'm sleeping in her sleeping bag. And I thought it was my sleeping bag, and she made me get out of it. I mean, she didn't want to get in her sleeping, but my sleeping bag, you know. So anyway, during the day, we're going, right? We're cooking healthy food, high fiber, heavy carbohydrate and so on. So we go, then we come to Burns Island. Jumped out, heavy duffel bags, you know, and they take to the tent, and we do a lot of initiatives. One is called the electric fence, which is like two trees and a wire across, or a rope across. All the teenagers will hold their hands, and there'll be a break. Okay, so like, my hand here, I'm the first person, I gotta climb over that electrical fence without touching it. What are we just doing? First of all, it's trying to get students to start thinking together as a group. And we're also to promote safety and trust, because it can risk getting over that thing. You may be far. And you're wondering if anybody's gonna worry about me, if I'm gonna hurt myself or not. So, and then you talk about problem solving. Okay. And so throughout the outward bound course with all kinds of different problem solving, you know. And some of them are really, really neat. This one was the dock over here. There's a dock here. And the water's right here. Very cold in Maine. Student has so many feet of rope and a long plank. And their job is to do something with that in order to get everybody from this dock over to the other dock. And I can't tell you if they were successful because I was in the bathroom. And that is the truth. I was in the bathroom. Actually, I'm lying to you. I was not in the bathroom. But that was happening. They told me I had to do something else. I had to go to the kitchen and wash the dishes. You know, so anyway. Then we do rock climbing, and before we do rock climbing, we talk about the belay, and the on belay, off belay, up rope, you know, and there we're talking about trust and working together, and it's just amazing just to see students a bit frightened, you know. Some would be climbing, some would repel, but everybody would kind of repel, and it's safe, but it's so scary, because you're right up high in a cliff, and right behind you is the Atlantic Ocean splashing on the bottom below, you know. That's where we went, the tower was that, I was in the morning, the tower was that, what? We got plenty of land, you know? And at day turned to the afternoon, and I'm looking, it's getting closer and closer and closer. So I thought to ask somebody, is that going to stop somewhere? I mean, is that going to stop there? Because I wanted to know, you know? So. And then we do rope course. Ms. Sheba, yeah?
I'm wondering, you're talking about mountain climbing and rappelling. If someone called to him, needed help or something, how would he know to help them, or how would he hear if someone was in trouble?
Maybe mountain climbing is not the right word, maybe rock climbing.
Well,
yeah. And it's just a cliff, okay? And before we do the rock session, the rock officer, assistant rock officer, me, and the rock climbers, we get together and we talk. We talk about where the instructor should go. Should the instructor be on top, belaying, and so on. And they took into consideration my hearing and so on. And some rock cliff would be all right because I'm able to see, okay? But this particular cliff, I couldn't see. Like, so what they basically hand me, I'm down below. What I do is I tie the student on the rope and stand them up, and then I'm talking to them, telling them what they can do. Use your legs, don't use your arms. But somebody trying to pull up and you get real tired, use your legs. So that's how we handle that. Mm-hmm. Talking about rappel, mm-hmm. when we have deaf students, what we do is that the deaf student is repelling. I got a line, my heel, I'm walking towards the edge of a cliff, and I'm dying into that person, they can see me, so I can comfort them. Because when you're like this, you don't want to look down. So if someone's down there, like, nah, you don't want to look down, you're just looking up. It gets to a point that one girl had a real hard time, you know? And so, my God, it must have been like an hour. Can you imagine? And so the rock climber, what she did was, she went down with her. Yeah. I mean, we're not forcing anybody. We know it's safe, it is. But we create the condition, you know, it's a challenge, and we try to convey to the student, we try to convey to the adults that it's a very, very challenging thing. Yeah. And one thing that could happen with them was, I can remember in June when we had a group of deaf high school students from Boston, Harris Middle School, and we're talking about rock climbing, right? We walk an hour and a half up this mountain, you know, an hour and a half. You know what the student did? They all sat down on the cliff, and they stand, and they stand this.
Refuse.
They ain't gonna do it! And so I was telling them that you haven't seen the, they really thought there was this jacking a mountain that you got, and it isn't, it's just about maybe, let's see here. Okay, see that building right there? Okay, from the ground, it goes up to the first black wood. So it's not really that high, but it's enough to get the challenge. And then, of course, each has a different line. Okay, so one is called axe. The other one is called intimidation. One is called the gully, which is like, if you look at it, it's like a gully just come up. Okay. Now, during the whole part, all the students have responsibility. And they got responsibility to work with the group. And the reason we get them at 5 o'clock in the morning to 9 at night, they don't get any break. When they do get a break, it's probably on the boat, you know, because when you row, then you just take a little bit of a break, then you go back and then you row. Or if you're sailing, then you have a longer break. But you know, land, you're moving. Why do we do that? Well, if we ever try to slow out or bound down, you know what happened? We think that the student will revert back to their old behavior, you know, this old self-centered tightness. Hey man, leave me alone. So. But if you keep them busy, they walk like this.
Well, guys, what do we do? We can do it, yeah, we can do it, yeah.
So we keep them busy. Yeah.
So the thing about this really fast-paced, hectic and so on, we start in the middle of a course a little bit late, we do a solo. Now some kids were freaked out by a solo because 15, 17-year-olds, we were telling them to let it go. Let it go. I mean, you've been running, you've been getting up 5 in the morning, and if things were not going the way we thought it should go, you stay up until midnight till you make sure you get it done. Solo, it's a time for you to sleep. Sleep. And it gives you time to think about things. Think about what you went through. Yeah. What we do, we take the rosters away.
Yeah.
We don't let them have rosters. Because what they would do, we put them on solo at 10 o'clock. 10:03! Oh, man. 10:05! It's going to be a long time for that particular person. So anyway, so out of the 46 students, we had one student dropped out, okay? And the student dropped out because he was the oldest of all the students, and he really wanted to do a 15-day course instead of a 20-day course. But his mom, I don't understand this, but mom just made him do a 20-day course. What happened was, after he filled out the band course, he would have about 3-4 days before going to military school. Now, I look at this kid, the kid had long hair, he had this, I don't know, some kind of weird hat. Now, I'm not really in tune with teenagers from wherever city he was, but he had this hat and he had this black parachute pants, you know. He was black everywhere, you know, in his clothes and everything. And he would do some strange thing. He would take both his legs. He was really flexible, you know. He'd put his leg over his neck and everything. So he was, but so he wanted to go home. We talked about it, you know. We thought it was a good reason. Other students, like one kid on solo, he was crying and he wanted to go home. And, yeah, he was the same kid that we did the rope course. We got like 10 elements. He stopped after the first element. So we thought, okay, tell you what, why don't you write pro, why you should go home, and on the left side, why you should stay. Yeah, and of course, I think what happened on this particular solo that when we put the student out, it was pouring rain, and it rained all day. Now, I told you before that they have a little bag of food that also got a tarp. But I don't know about a tarp, and we teach them how to built a tarp so they can protect themselves from the element. And surprisingly, most of the students did quite well. You know. Of course, we're checking them twice a day, but no. We also have a system where each student has a whistle. It's called a chain. So if something happens to a student, the next student that hears it will blow, and the last student will have a three-arm horn, and they will come and see what happens and maybe evacuate the student.
Did deaf kids have the whistles too?
The deaf student that I've been with was only a 5-6 day course. Okay. There was one course in Maine, I think, in 1986, where they did a solo, but it was overnight. And so I don't know how they handled that.
Second question. Has anybody ever been hurt seriously on that outward bound?
There's been some, but we have a very, very good, a very good record. No one ever died on that bound course. Also, I should take that back. I'm trying to think now. Something happened in Colorado. I can. I mean, these are. We talk about rock climbing and talking about rope course. Hey, I mean. It's really high risk, but we're working very, very hard to be as safe as possible. If we feel that a student, like on a rope course, if we feel the student is not paying attention or cares, we will not let that student go up in the rope course. I mean, we hammer. Think about it. If we were not responsible safety-wise, hey, can you imagine the liability? Yeah, so we really gone ho on that. What we would do is that we would look at groups, just suppose we have a group of adults in their 40s, okay? Maybe some of them may be slightly overweight. We don't, okay, okay, we're going to run 4 miles at 5 o'clock in the morning. We would not do that. What we would do is that we'd probably maybe do some aerobics, you know, or maybe just take a walk, you know. What we want is to have them within the aerobic rate for at least like 20 minutes or so. And so we do take that in account.
Okay.
And then at the end, we look anybody done it? I kept looking at you. Did you ever do an outward bound course? Have you ever thought about doing an outward bound course? Okay. Okay. If you complete an outward bound course that you really prefer at first, you will get a pin. Okay. The thing about this particular pin is that when you wear it and you walk around anywhere in the US of A, and somebody else who has done an outward bound course with that pin, they know what you've been through. It hasn't been easy. Can you imagine being in a pullman boat and you gotta go to the bathroom, in the open, in a bucket? Not easy. Of course, once in a while, the people outward bound are really sensitive. For example, they have what's called professional development courses where you may get men and women from corporations. Now, we don't put them in situations where the men go, hey, babe, what's the matter? You can't do it! We don't do that because we're really sensitive, so we probably make other kinds of arrangements. So the student stands around. What we would do is that we would have a student around here, and what we would do is that we put names of. We can do it all kinds of different ways. One way that we did in this particular course, there was all kinds of pins in the bag, and we said, if you feel that you deserve a pin, like a student, you will go and take that pin and explain to the group why you deserve it. Okay, that's one way. Another way would be that I take a pin and I would look to the other person and I would say to the other person, and explain to that person why I think that person deserves a pin. And then she would take the pin and say it to the next person. Okay. And at the end of that, the bond course, my God, everybody's so tight. You know, everybody's been through a lot. Everybody, Dr. Rock and I, the first 2-3 initiatives, like the electrical fence and stuff like that, you know, everybody's individual. But when you get to the end of an outward bound course, you can see them work in the group. The first expedition on the first day was teaching. Okay. At the end, the student does most of it. The last officer is kind of watching, but the student's doing it. We're giving them the responsibility, and they can do it. Okay. This is outward bound in a badge. That looks like the pin, and I like to read. It says, to serve, to strive, and not to yield.
Strive.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Can you pass it around?
Yeah, question?
Can you pass it around?
Oh, sure. Great.
And your pin, too?
Sure. Don't steal my hat, okay? Hey, you know, I think I got the same problem you do. I see it's 7:37, and I think I'm in the mood for ice cream, you know? Any of you in the mood for ice cream, too? Okay, good. So anyways, if you have any questions, you can ask me later, okay? Anybody have any quick questions now? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do most of the kids pass? Would you say that most of them are successful?
Yeah. Well, I take that back a little bit. The course that was the 23-day course before, they got all kinds of problems. Yeah, you think about it. Here's a kid at home. You know, he doesn't have any responsibility, and they come here. And we're pushing and pushing and pushing. You know, we do a lot of counseling. We take students aside, we talk about it, or sometimes we expect people to work about it. Let's talk about it. We're always talking about it. You know, like maybe day two, we get everybody sitting in the circle. Anybody will talk about their low points? See, we're giving students permission to be able to express themselves. You know, like a teenager at home, maybe they got a problem, but nobody wants to listen to them. We're at a banquet, we're listening. And then somebody asked about the high school. Yeah.
I've worked for a similar wilderness program, but it's a Christian program. And I was wondering if you were able to share your faith with the children and with the youth and talk about that with them, since it's not a per se Christian program.
No, we do. We hold hands. Have a moment of silence. And that's where we permit them to have a moment of silence before we eat. We don't, you know, you're talking about faith and maybe religion or whatever. We don't do that. We really believe that each person in the group is so unique. We get people from all walks of life and so on. Did that answer your question? Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of praying going on. I really do.